Well, good morning, y'all. You know, I've given this some thought, and really, whether we want to acknowledge it or not, I think the truth is that we're all on this, like, desperate quest in a search for meaning in our lives. And if we find it, there is nothing more transformative. There is nothing that has greater healing for our souls than discovering that our life has meaning and purpose. For those of you who don't know me, I'm a volunteer here, and last year I retired for about a minute. And I have to tell you that while I was in it, though, like, it really affected me. Because as I was standing in the aftermath of everything that had occurred, feeling pretty vulnerable and wondering kind of like, all right, is this it? Like, is my career path, what I've lived for the last, you know, couple decades, is it just over now, or like what? And I mean, you know, a lot of my identity, if I'm honest, a lot of my identity was wrapped up in what I did for a living. And it took a pretty big hit on me, and it took a lot before I could just kind of rise above it and to realize that my life is not defined by my career. But then, if not that, then what? Right? So it threw me into this kind of introspective time to discover, who am I then outside of my job? And what do I really want my life to be about? And I spent a couple of months in really deep and honest and meaningful meditation on this. And I came out really believing that I really want my life to be spent walking down the narrow dirt path that leads to Jesus. And that's really true. But in order to do that, like, I have to live differently. I have to live differently than the way that I've been living. And I have to live differently than what culture demands is the way that I should live. Because I have to live for God in such a way that it goes beyond just going through the motions of religion, if you know what I mean. It goes beyond just like a Sunday morning church thing, or just occasionally reading my Bible or praying thing, or just being a good person. This is about really pouring your whole self into something. Because the truth is, we're all going to fill our lives with something, and the question is, what will you fill your life with? Will it be something that at the end of the day has any value that goes beyond the realm of this world? That's the question. Said differently, if you knew you only had 30 days left to live, what would you fill your life with? But really, the opposite is kind of true, right? I mean, we kind of live like we're not going to someday die. Not to depress you or anything. You know, I would contend that the number one reason for those of us who have become kind of apathetic to our spirituality is because so many of us have become disconnected from God. And as a result, every day that we wake up, we make what I'm going to say is an unconscious decision. All right? It's not something that's kind of in the forefront of our minds that we're making a decision about. We make an unconscious decision that day, we're going to fill our lives with something other than the stuff of God. We're going to live that day for something other than living for Jesus. And so our days become, without even knowing it, filled with work, filled with kids' activities, the stuff of just staying busy without giving it much thought or intentionality behind it. But whatever it is, we get filled up with the stuff of life to the point that we have pushed our spirituality so far out of our lives that it's not even detectable. Like, would you really refer to yourself as a spiritual being? Like, do you acknowledge the fact that you have a soul and that makes you uniquely you and who you are? How then can we turn that around and live differently and change the purpose of our life from just walking through life almost mindlessly to walking every day with God? So we're in this series where we're choosing our favorite Old Testament stories. And for me, I just love Elijah and Elisha. Those are two incredible guys in the Old Testament. So, you know, in the ancient time of kings and prophets and plagues and droughts comes a story about how God works in our lives. Elisha was a protege of Elijah, who I talked about a few weeks ago. And he became a great prophet in his own right, and he had a direct line to God. And there was a moment in time when God directed Elisha to go to the home of this widow, whose basically life was just on the verge of falling apart. And just when it looked like she was about to lose everything, God shows up in the person of Elisha. And so in 2 Kings chapter 4, it says, "The wife of a man from the company of the prophets cried out to Elisha, 'Your servant, my husband, is dead.'" Now, I'm reading into this like she's a little ticked. This next thing, I think, is a dig. And you know he loved God. But now his creditor is coming to take my two boys as his slaves. So this woman is in a hard place, right? And she has every right to be resentful. Her husband, who is a devoted follower of God, he served God faithfully, and look where it got him. He's dead, she's broke, and now she's about to lose her kids because of the debt that her husband left behind. This widow had her back up against the wall, and she had no means of earning any income. And the bank was not only coming to take her home, but in those days, the way that you paid off debt is they would actually come and take your kids, put them into slavery to pay off the family debt, which I don't think is necessarily a bad plan. And I'm not sure why they phased that out over the years. I got a few. But needless to say, she's hurting, right? And so in verse 2, Elisha says, "How can I help you? Tell me, what do you have in your house?" Well, what kind of question is that? She's in the midst of despair, and this prophet's asking her, "What do you have in your house?" When you ask God to come into your life, be prepared to answer the question, "What do you have in your house? How much capacity do you have for God? What are you willing to put in, have skin in the game, if God's going to come in and make a difference in your life?" I am sure the widow was thinking to herself, you know, good prophets must be really hard to come by these days because it's obvious I ain't got nothing, right? He must be really slow. But she says, "Except I do have this one thing." She says, "I do have this small jar of olive oil." Now, here's where the story takes a little twist. Just when you think it is all hopeless, she comes up with this small jar of oil. Now, olive oil in those days was used as currency because it was such a precious commodity, much like gold is thought of today, because it was such a practical thing. And this woman has the tiniest bit of oil in the bottom of this jar that really represented everything that she owned was in that jar. One thing about God working in us, like the small boy with Jesus who had the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, he can use whatever it is that we have in our house. He can use whatever we have to work with. It doesn't matter what your gifts and abilities are or how small or how modest you may think they are. It's never too small for God. Because God uses ordinary people to do extraordinary things. Well, receiving his direction from God, Elisha told her to do something pretty strange. In verse 3, he says, I want you to go around and I want you to ask your neighbors for empty jars. Don't just ask for a few. Get as many as you can. Then go inside, shut the door behind you and your sons. Pour that little bit of oil that you have in that jar, and as each jar is filled, put it to one side. I imagine that this widow is probably thinking that Elisha is just a little off at this point, right? Or maybe she has more faith than I would in that situation, because I would think he's off. I mean, what a strange thing to ask, to go around all of your neighbors and ask for as many empty jars that have no value in the neighborhood and get as many as you can get your hands on, and then take this tiny bit of oil that you have in the bottom of this jar and pour it out into all these other jars. Don't underestimate what a huge act of faith he's asking here. Because this little bit of oil is all that she has left. It probably pays for the last bit of food that she can gather before her house and her kids are taken. And now he's asking her to pour that little bit of oil out into all of these jars, which would completely dilute that little bit of oil, making it so that it would have no value at all. So if she does that, it would take guts to pull that off. It's funny because, you know, for a lot of us, it seems that the only way that we find the faith to do, to be willing to do what God asks us to do, is only when the times are when our backs are up against the wall and it's like we have no other options, so we go to the God card, right? These empty jars that she's collected in this story are like metaphors for our lives. Each empty jar represents one of us, our life. And in really, the jar itself has very little value. I mean, a jar that is full of the wrong stuff, it's even worse. It has like negative value. But a jar that is full of something precious, something that has great value, that is worth keeping and holding on to, right? However, before we can do that, it is just as important as filling our jars with the right stuff is emptying our jars of the wrong stuff. We have to create capacity for God in the jars of our lives. Well, it goes on in verse 5, and it says, she left him, shut the door behind her and her sons. They brought the jars into her, and she took this tiny bit of oil, and she poured it into the jars. And she just kept pouring it and pouring it and pouring it. And when all the jars were full, she says to her son, hey, bring me another one. And he says, there's not a jar left. And in that moment, the oil stops flowing. So the widow and her sons filled the house, just as the prophet had told them, with every jar and container that they could get their hands on. And the miracle was that this tiny bit of oil in the bottom of this jar just kept flowing and flowing to the point that there was more oil than was beyond their wildest imagination. But when they finally ran out of jars, when they finally ran out of capacity, it stopped. here's like the point of the story. When you run out of capacity to fill the jar of your life, it stops. When you run out of space for God in your life because your life is filled with all of the wrong stuff, God stops flowing into your life because there's just no room for him in your life. And so we lose our connection with him and we lose our drive for him and the fulfillment that brings. Well, in verse 7, it says, she went and she told the man of God all that had happened about the miracle. And he says, okay, go now, sell the oil, pay off your debts, and you and your sons can live off of what is left. Pretty awesome. The thing about God working in us is that he doesn't come in and just take over and do it for us. He asks you what's in your house. What's your skin in the game? What is it that you're going to give him to work with? He asks us to do it for ourselves, and he gives us the power to accomplish something immeasurably more than we could ever ask or imagine because we now have God at our backs. Most of the time, when we're talking about our relationship with God, there is no wow factor in our walk with God. There's no big miracles, no big wave of emotion that causes us to grow, no magic formula, like a 1, 2, 3, and here you go. It's just plain old maintaining every day your passion and obedience and faithfulness to God day in and day out. I mean, just look, this huge miracle happened, right? That just changed this woman's life forever. And so instead of Elisha going, okay, go pay off your debt and then take the rest of that money, throw yourself a party for you and your neighbors and like, you know, go have this great time or go buy yourself a Maserati. Like, that's like, you've been through hell. Like, you deserve that thing, right? No, it's not like that at all. It's like this miracle occurred, and it's like super subdued, and it's just like, okay, now go and live your life. God pulled through for you. And live every day with the knowledge that you live in the presence of God who's there for you. It's day in, day out, just walking every day in Jesus, which sounds really simple, but it's super hard. 90% of the Christian faith is just filling up our jars with the right stuff. And just like he asked that widow to trust him and to pour everything out that she had, which was a huge act of faith, he asks us to do the same. He wants to exchange the junk in our lives that we need to dump out with something more valuable that we can fill ourselves up with. Make no mistake about it. The emptying out part is the hardest part of the Christian life. We have jammed up our lives with so much crap that we have no capacity in the jar of our lives for the stuff of God. And we have a hard time of letting go of all of that junk that we have accumulated over time that has no meaning, that's just clutter. It's the painful process of ridding ourselves of all of the desires for the wrong stuff of this world. It is the letting go of the junk of this world so that we can grab hold on to the stuff of God, because God wants to be the only thing in your jar. When you look at your calendar, you get a pretty good snapshot of where your priorities in your life are at, don't you? I mean, because the God stuff is usually the first to get cut out because it really isn't a priority. So stuff like going to church on Sunday with their family or giving financially or serving in some capacity or doing a small group, man, that sure feels like a lot of work. It does. And so maybe without even realizing it, we push God further and further from our lives because sometimes filling our jars with the emptiness of the daily grind is more appealing than filling ourselves with the work that it takes to stay close to God, because truth is, man, we just want to hit the easy button. I got to tell you, truth is, you know, I'm not up here preaching because I always preach to myself, and I struggle with the same stuff. Like, and, you know, there's times when I just feel like I've just had this loss of spiritual passion, and I feel just dead and dry, and I know what that means. It means I got to work my rear end off to get all the stuff out, to keep the junk out that shouldn't be there, so that I can create capacity for the stuff of God. And believe it or not, the competition of all of the stuff that wants to be in your jar is immense. Like, this is not like a simple metaphor of, like, you know, God versus evil in your jar. It's God versus everything else in the entire world that you can fill your jar up with versus God. That's really what we're talking about. But out of all the stuff in the world that you could fill your jars up with, God wants to be the one thing, the only thing. And so recently, in my post-retirement now, I've been spending some focused time really trying to figure this thing out and really creating plans that I hope will help me create capacity for the right stuff. And I gotta tell you, I have no idea if it's gonna work or not. I'm just making it up as I go. But here's what I'm committed to. I'm committed to trying like heck to get to the finish line of my life in such a way that I end up with this life that had real meaning. I came across this great quote by George Bernard Shaw, the playwright. He says this: "This is the true joy in life, being used for a purpose that you believe is a mighty one. Being a force of nature instead of this feverish, selfish little clod of ailments and grievances and complaining and negativity that the world will not devote itself to making you happy." He says, "I'm of the opinion that my life belongs to the whole community, and as long as I live, it is my privilege to do for it what I can. I want to be thoroughly used up when I die. For the harder I work, the more I live. I rejoice in life for its own sake. Life is no brief candle to me that it one day burns out. It is a sort of splendid torch which I have the privilege of being able to hold for a moment in time. And while I hold it, I want to make sure that it burns as brightly as possible before handing it on to future generations." Yeah, I love that. I don't know the secret to keeping the torch of our lives burning brightly, keeping that passion for God, keeping our jars full of the right stuff. But best I can figure, it is just this constant daily process where we wake up and we make a conscious decision that today I'm going to fill up my life differently. I'm going to fill up my life with the stuff of God. And it's this constant then scraping and struggling and emptying out of all of the junk, out of the jars of our lives that have no meaning, and filling up our hearts with Jesus. But just to cut to the chase this morning, ask yourself this. If you knew your time was limited, and by the way, it is, what would you get rid of from your life? How would you live differently? And what would you fill your life up with that you think has amazing value that will go beyond the realm of this world?